This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, Piedmont pilots eligible for bonuses, but not cabin crew. The FAA zero tolerance for unruly and dangerous behavior toolkit. Late night TV hosts roast Delta Airlines. Southwest Airlines cuts flights. And new startup Avelo Airlines makes route changes. We also have an Avelo trip report and a conversation with the CEO of CrewDog Electronics. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 668 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight. Joining me is David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian, military aviation expert.
Hello, everyone. Looking forward to a good show. It's going to be a bit buggy, but more about that later.
Yeah. We'll come to that in just a second. But first, next, we have Max Trescott with us. He's host of Aviation News Talk Podcast, a national CFI of the year, and he's an expert on the Cirrus aircraft.
Hey, Max. Great to be here again. And David's absolutely spot on. What is that noise I hear?
Well, we're going to try some post-production magic, but starting right now, when we introduce Rob Mark, the former senior editor of Flying Magazine and publisher of the Jetwine blog, we get to hear his background noise.
You mean my cicadas?
Cicadas. Yeah.
No, folks, he isn't. He's not raising them. It's just they yeah. surround him.
That's an interesting point. No, I'm not raising them. They're raising havoc here in outside the studio window, and they make a hell of a lot of noise.
They do. Every August, we have the arrival of the cicadas around Rob's house. So yeah. We'll do what we need to.
My ears are ringing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, we've got some news to talk about. Are you guys ready to talk some news?
Or ready from the West?
Ready from the Midwest.
Ready from the South.
Southern Delaware.
What, South Philly?
Well, Delaware, it's below the Mason-Dixon line.
Our first story comes from, wait a minute, where is this from? Paddleyouronowncanoe.com. I didn't notice that. I'm not sure what that is. But Rob, pilots at Piedmont seem to be making out financially pretty well these days.
Well, I mean, in terms of, it's all relative to regional airline pilots, but regional airline money has certainly gone up over the last few years from what we used to talk about, pilots being paid peanuts, and they're making a better money. But this time, what really irked everybody was that the pilots got bonuses and the flight attendants are still arguing, trying to get a contract. And many people in the labor movement thought that was rather unfair. And one of the comments I saw to this story was, of course it's unfair. That's what they have unions for. Because they have to fight for things like that. And it never fails to amaze me that CEOs of any organization can do things like that and say, oh, those people over there? Oh, well, we don't even see them. They just don't exist. But hang on. Keep your dedication to the company going, because we'll take care of you one of these days.
It's tough to tough to stomach, I guess. So we should explain that Piedmont is a wholly owned subsidiary of American Airlines. It operates under the American Eagle brand. It's a regional carrier. So Piedmont says they struck a deal with the ALPA union where captains would receive a $30,000 retention bonus in November. And additionally, current first officers would get $30,000 also if and when they're promoted to captain. And pilots who move on from Piedmont to American's mainline business would get $70,000. But there's more. Apparently, also pilots who meet certain working hours targets over the next 2 years would be eligible for an additional $50,000. The potential is quite a bit of cash.
Well, and I think something that's interesting. We were talking about the way that Southwest was keeping pilots, flight attendants, mechanics really busy last week, and I didn't hear any mention about bonuses. I mean, they do get more money for working past their guarantees, at least, you know, that's interesting, at least on the pilot side. But I don't know if the flight attendants have that. I don't believe they do, because I believe flight attendants only get paid when the aircraft is in motion. And so if they're delayed and they sit on the ground at a say midway for an hour and a half taking a delay, flight attendants don't get paid for that.
Yeah.
And I've never understood how the flight attendants union has managed to not bust their chops on that. Just amazing to me, but I believe that's what happened. That's another reason the flight attendants get so upset, and I don't blame them.
Hey, I want to address the most important part of the story, which is the source, the paddle your own canoe.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, so this actually goes back to a joke from childhood. So I knew instantly what the reference was. You're probably familiar with the African antelope that you know sometimes see thundering, you know, herds crossing the river as the crocodiles are trying to eat them. Those are called gnus, G-N-U, but people will mispronounce it as gnu. And so the joke, which is, you know, kind of an 8-year-old level, two mother gnus were talking about their baby gnus. Again, I'm mispronouncing it purposely. The first mother had a frisky, disobedient little gnu that caused everyone a lot of trouble. But she was always looking at the behavior of the other little gnus. One day, she said to the second mother, "My little gnu is such a problem. If you see him getting into any trouble, feel free to give him a whack." Second mother replied, "Go paddle your own canoe."
That's where that comes from. I never heard that. I've never heard that.
Okay, thank you for that bit of flavor, Max.
I'm trying to provide the color here this evening.
But I think I have to tell you, I think that if you're going to start that kind of rivalry, I'm going to have to start coming up with some of my own jokes.
Oh, my God.
And they won't be nearly as good as yours.
Yeah, we know that course, in history.
The gauntlet has just been thrown. Who's going to come up with the worst jokes?
Yes, and we don't want old jokes. We want canoe jokes. So.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
Chalk one up for Rob.
Okay.
The battle lines have been drawn.
Sorry, I didn't mean to... I didn't mean to distract anybody. Sorry.
That's quite all right. So the next story comes from a publication that we have heard of that needs no explanation, and that's USA Today. That's an easy one. He's restrained now. Chilling airplane video serves as FAA warning about unruly passengers. And the FAA has a webpage that I wasn't aware of before looking into this story. It's titled Zero Tolerance for Unruly and Dangerous Behavior Toolkit. And it provides a lot of kind of interesting information, including this video and some other videos. It's got a letter from Administrator Dixon to airport leaders on the zero tolerance policy. It's got his message on that policy. And one titled, "You Don't Want Your Pilots Distracted, Unruly Behavior Doesn't Fly." And they also have some, what would you call them, posters or things that, images that could be used as posters around airports, trying to make the point that, you know, if you're unruly aboard an airplane, you're causing a problem and it may become a problem for you.
And I've seen those posted on the FAA's Instagram website, essentially as memes, including one which I saw, which had a really old lady on it, which to me was just kind of weird. I don't think that, you know, putting memes out in kind of a cutesy social media, you know, kind of way is going to stop the violence in the pack of airliners. But, you know, I guess they're looking for any possible solution they can come up with.
One of the videos is a bunch of kids, you know, youngsters talking about, I mean, really young, I don't know, 8, 12-year-olds, maybe something like that, talking about what a bad idea it is for the grown-ups to be fighting on an airplane.
I think the kids are absolutely right. And the question is, how come, well, do those people respond to that? I doubt it. I doubt that the people that cause that kind of chaos on an airplane are going to be watching videos like that. And it's a big safety issue, or similar to a safety issue that we talk about all the time, that the people that really need to hear the line, the story about what's safe and what isn't, never read the publications or watch the videos or listen to the podcasts that might tell them about that kind of thing. So But I still would love to know exactly what it is that has just set people off on these crazy situations. I mean, if you listen to that video that came with this one, you hear this guy in the back just screaming about, you know, help me, help me, help me. And I still think that, you know, we talked about not having duct tape last week. They don't want that. But I still think those kits ought to come with a sock that you could just stuff in the person's mouth. And if they don't like it, you know, say, well, tough, stuff a sock in it. That's what always works. And, but this is crazy. And it doesn't seem to be going away. And now that the Delta variant is here and causing more chaos, I bet you this kind of stuff's going to increase.
The Delta variant. Now there's an interesting segue.
Yeah. Like the airline.
There is, and we also see that some of the late-night TV hosts have been roasting Ed Bastian, the CEO of Delta Airlines, for apparently refusing to use the term Delta variant.
This is really a riot. We've got a video of Jimmy Kimmel talking about it. It was the lead kickoff item. And, of course, I guess the CEO was recently in the press talking about the change where they're going to now require either weekly testing of unvaccinated employees. Oh, and, by the way, not or, they'll be charged an extra $200 for health insurance if they choose not to get vaccinated. So it was in conjunction with that that people noted, gee, you know, it's kind of interesting that the CEO of Delta didn't use the word Delta variant as he was talking about this problem. No surprise. And so he instead actually referred to it by a name that I had not heard. The official name for the Delta variant, B.1.617.2. And there was actually a tweet which came out from Delta's Chief Health Officer Henry Ting, who poked fun at this situation. He said, "We prefer to call it the B.1.617.2 variant, since that is so much more simple to say and remember than Delta."
So, yeah.
Oh, the trials and tribulations of running an airline. It must keep these people up at night.
Jimmy Fallon said in his show, "This explains why pilots have been saying, 'Welcome aboard. Thank you for flying B.1.617.2 airlines.'" He said, apparently he's afraid that if he says Delta too many times, the virus will show up like the Candyman.
Well, and they also said he also quipped that the CEO is now referring to the airlines as Delta. You know, I guess they're trying to come up with a name that sounds different than Delta virus. Pretty good joke.
Yeah.
You could just call it the COVID the current COVID virus. I mean, come on. But anyway, remember, there is no sense of humor in aviation.
No, nor in the government. But so Myers, Seth Myers, had one that this kind of cuts a little close, maybe. He said the CEO of Delta Airlines said in a new interview that he won't refer to the new coronavirus variant as Delta. though I don't think it's cool that he keeps calling it the Air China virus.
Bad.
Bad. Yeah, yeah.
So that, and I would encourage anybody to go to the show notes and, you know, click on that link and watch the video, because they show the entire opening monologue, which then goes from Delta into talking about Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin, and they made some rather amusing jokes about that, which which were funny. So anyway, it's a great video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That particular spacecraft is an easy target, given the way it given its appearance.
Yep.
Southwest Airlines. We've talked about them recently, about complaints from Southwest Airlines pilots talking about flight delays and cancellations. And so CNBC reports that Southwest has responded by cutting flights, fewer flights. So Southwest is going to reduce an average of 27 flights a day, and this is from September 7th through October 6th, and cut 162 flights a day from October 7th through November 5th. Now, it does say that they'll plan to adjust schedules in November and December also, but that they would protect holiday bookings. And CEO Gary Kelly said, "We're confident these adjustments will create a more reliable travel experience." So, you know, talking about the Delta variant, and I think we're perhaps seeing some softening of travel demand as a result of that. And maybe that's really what's happening here.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, which is worse, booking a flight, heading to the airport, and perhaps boarding the airplane, and then sitting there or sitting in the lobby, and the gate agent says, "Well, we're going to be a little late because we don't have anybody to crew the airplane. We're either short flight attendants or we're short pilots, but bear with us. They're coming." So is that bad, or is it just easier to not even have the flight available? And of the two, I think the latter is probably the better way to do it. But there's no doubt that the COVID variant, from making travel more interesting again to, wait a minute, change my mind. No, on second thought, we won't fly because it's not interesting anymore. I mean, it's really tough. You know, if we had that Dan Webbage guy around from another airline, I'll bet he could make a great deal more sense out of this, but it's got to be just absolute chaos for these people.
So let me relate my most recent flight, which was on Sunday night, flying back from Denver to San Jose. First thing, I saw TSA security lines that were longer than I have ever seen in my life at any time, any airport, anywhere in the world. It was stunning. This was in the East Terminal, I think. Anyway, there are two different lines, the North security lines, the South security lines. About 3 years ago, I went ahead and signed up for PRE, which is TSA's kind of expedited screening process. If you jump through a number of hoops and have a personal interview and things like that. And I was so grateful I had that, because the lines looked like they just kept wrapping around the building. It literally took from the front of the line a couple of minutes to get to the back of the line. And that's after you get by past the mazes. You know, you get by the mazes with most of the people pretty fast, but then they were just lined up all around the terminal. So I don't know what was going on with the TSA. The pre-line was shut down at the North security area. So I thought, well, this is worth a walk to the South security area. Yeah. Fortunately, PRE was open there. And again, it was probably the longest pre-line that I've ever seen, but it was probably 5 minutes instead of what looked like an hour to get through the other line. So that was kind of the crazy start to the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, the question is it volume is up, or is the fact that the TSA is able to handle the volume due to staffing?
Well, I think volume is actually down. I saw a separate item from TSA sometime in the last week or two that said, you know, number of passengers being screened was as low as it's been now since, I think, May. Mm. So there has been a drop in airline passengers, but it sounds like they were having staffing difficulties that particular night. And probably because it was a Sunday night, it was, you know, peak volume. But that was pretty amazing. I then got onto my flight, and I was flying Southwest. The outbound flight to Denver, I didn't notice anything unusual about the seats. Coming back, I was on a 737-800, and holy cow, I was in the first row, and those seats were so narrow. I mean, there was just like no space beyond my hips. It was quite shocking. But what really made the trip fun was the guy next to me who refused to put his mask up over his nose, which essentially made it ineffective, who then was coughing for a significant part of the flight.
Oh,
so
God.
If I'm hospitalized next week,
you know who to blame.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and my wife said, and well, did you say anything to him? Or it's like, well, gee, you know, these days with all the violence going on, if I say something, I may be losing a few teeth. So of course I didn't say anything to him. So it's, these are tough times, but I must say that, in retrospect, if I had to do it all over again, probably wasn't worth the trip. I did go out to go teach at a Cirrus pilot proficiency program. That part was actually fun. But the coming home, not so fun.
Was the plane full?
Oh, yeah. I think there were a couple empty seats, but it was very close to full. Every flight I've been on lately has been full.
Yeah. Well, speaking of flights, we've talked about Avelo, Avelo. I can never remember the preferred pronunciation of this airline. But we see from thepointsky.com that the airline has cut back some destinations from its route map. Monterey, California's disappeared. St. George, Utah has disappeared. Those were destinations that they were not flying to, but they were scheduled to start either in late September or early October of this year, but they've disappeared from the schedule. The airline says they'd take another look at our plans for these two markets next spring. They also point out that demand is lower than expected, and the COVID Delta variant is cited as a cause.
Well, and I'm familiar with both those markets. Monterey is about an hour and a half here, and I'm there quite frequently. St. George, Utah, they've got a new airport in the last 10 years. There used to be a great one right next to the city, and now the new one is probably, 20 miles out of town. Neither of them are a particularly large market, and I think they're flying out of where were they flying? These are flights from Burbank, I think, to these locations. I would think that these are pretty low-volume routes to begin with. So I'm guessing they kind of saw, based on the pre-flight bookings, that their time was probably better spent on other markets.
Yeah, but that was supposed to be their niche. Service out of Burbank and to all these great destinations. And I don't know what it's looking like on the East Coast. I think they said their bookings are stronger, but I mean, it does make you kind of wonder how well they're supported financially if before the service even begins, they cancel them because of lack of interest. Did they think this whole thing through very well? I don't know.
Of course, it's difficult to plan, but they really have been making lots of adjustments all along. They were to begin flights to Provo, Utah, starting in the middle of September, but that's been pushed out till the middle of November. And this past July, they cut some flights to two of its markets at that time, Grand Junction, Colorado, and Bozeman, Montana. They also dropped the service to Mesa, Phoenix, Arizona. So these aren't necessarily permanently dropped out of the routes there. But in terms of being viable right now, it's just not happening, I guess.
I think Burbank's a good location. I think that'll probably work out well for them as a hub. They can capture a lot of the North LA market from there. Obviously, people that live, you know, LAX and south are not going to drive to Burbank. But I think, the challenge is for any of these airlines that try to do point-to-point services, you know, some of the routes are thin. They're just, you know, there's just not that much demand. And the timing is difficult also. You know, we've got travel, which is declining now because of the Delta variant. We're about to head into the fall season where seasonally all traffic, you know, goes down in September. And these routes were supposed to start in September. So I think it's kind of a double whammy. And, you know, these routes may, you know, work out for them in the future, but apparently they're just not sustainable right now.
Well, as it turns out, Brian Coleman flew a Velo in a not too distant past here. We had heard one trip report from him on that experience, but we have another one. He had a conversation with Micah on his flight, so we can listen to Brian and Micah right now.
So we're back. It's your main man, Micah, and I'm speaking to your favorite former associate producer.
And now contributing editor, Brian.
Brian, it's good to talk to you again. And you have another trip report for us. It sounds like, from what I hear, you were back with Avelo Airlines again. You liked it so much the first time, you went back for a second trip.
I did. And Avelo is the airline that I want to love and fly with them more. But I still think they have some growing pains that they're working through, and they're not quite there to take the top spot of United as my carrier of choice.
Well, and United is only your carrier of choice because you have so many miles on them, not for the great, outstanding, wonderful service. So there are many opportunities still for Avelo.
There are. And they fly to a bunch of interesting places, that many of them that I've never been to, which kind of leads us into this trip.
This time, you took a trip with a group of people, and you flew up to way up in Northern California. Where'd you go, and what brought you there?
Went to Eureka, California, and went there with a neighbor simply to have someplace to go to. In California, we have loosened the COVID restrictions, and the neighbor was comfortable in traveling by air and wanted to go someplace. And I suggested we take a flight on Avelo since I had a relatively positive experience the first time, and they were game for it, so off we flew.
Now, Eureka is so far north in California, you're practically in Oregon, and it's near the Sequoia National Forest, is it not?
It is, and that was one of the things that was kind of fun to do. Once we got to Eureka, we did a little day trip and went on a hike, and I was able to see the third largest tree in California, and it's about 50 feet in circumference. So it's quite old, a little over. They estimate it to be at 2,500 years old.
Wow. That must have been fascinating. Sounds great. So what was different about this trip? First of all, there was a bunch of you. Did you, last time you were up and back, this time you were spending some time up there. Did you bring luggage along? Did you carry it on? Did you check it? How was the service?
There's an awful lot to unpack there. So yes, okay. Yes, because we actually wanted to see the countryside. We flew up on Wednesday. They did not have service on Thursday. So we flew back on Friday. So had to check a suitcase. The ground operations in Burbank, they're really starting to get their act together now that they've had a couple months of experience. And I wish I could say that were true in Eureka, but it's not. And I think because they only have one flight every other day, they're using contract workers, and things were a tad bit slow.
Now, before we go any further with that, let's just talk about checking luggage for the first time. Mentioned it last time we spoke.
Yeah.
But when you check luggage on Avelo, they're one of the airlines, maybe the only airline that I know of anyway, that I think does it right. They charge more for a carry-on than they do for a checked bag because it allows them to turn the plane around faster. Is that correct?
Well, they certainly charge more. It doesn't seem like it enables them to turn around the plane any faster. Again, probably growing pains. They have an awful lot of employees that are brand new to the aviation industry, and I think that's hurting their operational performance. So just about every flight I was on with them has been delayed, and I think a lot of it has to do with just this inexperience. So again, it's the airline that I want to love, but they're not quite there yet. But yeah, they charge $10 to check a bag and $35 to carry it on. Except I also wasn't able to figure out how they know if you've paid to carry on the bag because I didn't notice any marking on the boarding pass and no one was really checking. But the overhead bins were completely open. And if you wanted to take your backpack and put it in the overhead bin, no one questioned it. So it was very bizarre. I need to dig deeper and figure out how exactly they police the carry-on bags or if it's just done on the honor system.
That's amazing. I'm quite surprised that they don't have some sort of system in place, at least none that you're aware of. And yeah, we'll have to find out. This may be the first Avello hack.
Yes. Yeah. You could save your $10 by sneaking your carry-on on board. But I think if enough people do it, they'll end up wising up to that. Getting back to landing in Eureka, it took them a good 10, 15 minutes to get the air stairs up to the plane. So because it's a secondary airport, very small airport, they don't have jetways. So they needed to get the stairs up there. That took quite some time. And then after we deplaned, it took another 45 minutes to get the luggage to baggage claim. Now, keep in mind, there's only one carousel. And it's about a 50-yard walk from the airplane to the baggage carousel, to the terminal. So I don't understand why it took so long, except there just weren't any contract workers to unload the plane. And as a result, because we couldn't get our bags off the plane, it also delayed the return flight from Eureka to Burbank. So they had a delayed departure as a result of this.
Can't believe that. That's just wild. Maybe people didn't show up to work. Maybe they weren't ready for the plane to arrive. Now, Avello flies 737s, right?
Correct.
They must have been turned on the APU. It must have been warm up there.
The outside temperature wasn't bad. But yeah, they had the APU running. The air conditioner was on. So it was quite pleasant. There just weren't any people around.
Very strange. What was the check-in process like down in L.A.?
It was fine. We got there a little bit early because we just didn't know how things were going to be. And of course, with LA traffic, all of the staff, so not only the people working the ticket counter, the checking counter, the flight attendants, everyone has such a happy, positive attitude. And that's one of the things that I really, really appreciate about Avello is just how nice everyone is, even if sometimes they're not as efficient as they could be. They're just phenomenally nice and pleasant.
Now, it's a small operation, and I suspect they don't have an incredible number of passengers yet. Did you recognize anybody who was working? Did anybody recognize you?
Yes, I did not recognize any passengers, but two of the flight attendants that served me going to Eureka also served me on the flight to Santa Rosa, which was kind of fun. Because I think if you remember, I hand out gifts to flight attendants every time I travel. So when I first went to Santa Rosa, gave the flight crew their little thank you card or greeting card, whatever I gave out that trip. And then this trip did the same thing. And I actually recognized one of the flight attendants from the first trip. The other one recognized me. And they were just so appreciative and so thankful. Just real quick, as an aside for the flight attendants, most of them are, like I said, brand new to the industry. And there was the lead flight attendant on the flight up to Eureka, who's actually an unemployed actor. And he said that he wanted to see the world and he thought working for an airline was a great way to do that. So he applied for Avello when he first saw the job ad. He said the hiring process took about a month and a half from when he first submitted his application to getting the job offer. And then he went to Florida for a week's worth of flight attendant training, and he was in the very first graduating class. He was so phenomenally pleased that he now has seniority with the airline, again, as one of the very first flight attendants. So just sort of fun and amazing how people get to where they are in the airline industry.
You know, I think it's wonderful that you hand out gifts to flight attendants. I do that too, because a flight attendant's work is so, so difficult and is often so unappreciated. And they're dealing with so many different things going on, and especially recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. With some of the crazy passengers. And again, they do work incredibly hard. And so I encourage people to appreciate your flight attendant one way or another, even if it's just a smile and a thank you.
Yep, absolutely. And as I've always said, it's their job to save my ass, not kiss it. So I figured a little gift might ensure them looking out for me a little bit more if anything were to happen.
So you were up in Eureka a couple of days, and I'm assuming good time up there?
Yeah, absolutely. Highly recommend anyone that wants to go see giant redwoods and hang out in nature. Tons of campgrounds, lots of very friendly people. It was really good. It was kind of sad to see that I think, like many tourist destinations, the coronavirus shutdown has hit the local economy fairly hard. So there were some businesses that didn't make it or were closed or had reduced hours. But everyone that I met, all the shop owners that I went in and talked with, were so looking forward to opening up of the state and the country and looking forward to welcoming the tourists again.
Well, while the Airplane Geeks is not exactly a travel show, let's just talk about travel for a little bit. There's been so much talk about difficulty with hotels or Airbnbs and rental cars. Did you experience any trouble with that while you were up there?
No, absolutely none. Eureka isn't known for its high-end properties. So I stayed at a Hilton property, a Hampton Inn, which I would consider on their lower end side, more budget friendly. And again, the staff was great there, just super happy. They were probably at 25% capacity. I wasn't expecting that they were going to do room cleaning service, but they did, which was a really special treat, because other hotels that I've stayed at during COVID, they've discontinued service and it's only been on request, but there they just did it automatically. They did not have the breakfast service the way they normally do, but they did provide boxed breakfasts and had a bagel and cream cheese and yogurt and either an apple. Well, one day it was an apple, the other day it was an orange. So it was quite nice, and it was all good.
Now, Avelo is known as a low-cost carrier. Do you mind saying, what did you pay for that trip?
So I paid the flight to Santa Rosa was part of their promotional pricing, where I paid $19 for that. This flight to Eureka was $29. So still very affordable. And that was each way. So,
are you kidding?
Yeah.
It was $10, $29? How can they charge that much? That's just crazy.
Yeah, well, they have the same business model that Southwest has. They have the first couple seats at the ultra discounted price. And as they sell out through the different fare basis, they raise the price. But I looked it up that morning, what it would have cost had I bought the ticket that day. And it would have been $119. I looked on the United website, because United flies there as well. And the United price was $249. So it was still a huge difference between what you'd pay on United versus what you'd pay on Avelo.
Even at $119, that's a great deal. That's really fabulous.
Yeah.
So you returned and you got there to the Eureka Airport. What happened on your return check-in?
The check-in process was really smooth. Being a small airport, it was really, really nice, because you really don't have a wait at TSA. They had a fantastic observation deck that's open to the public. So that's on the non-secure side of security. So you walk up a set of stairs and they have a really nice World War II memorial there, with recognition of the local citizens that served during World War II, and an observation deck that overlooked the runway, which was kind of nice. Another neat thing that they have, I remember years ago, Portland Airport had the runway pattern as the carpet pattern in the terminal building. Well, here in Eureka, Arcata Airport, they have a scaled down version of the runways inlaid in linoleum, which was, I thought, super cool. So I grabbed a photo of that, and maybe Max will put that in the show notes. So it was kind of fun for that. The unfortunate part, after you get through security and you're in the waiting area, because it's such a small airport and Avelo holds the aircraft, the 737 holds 189 passengers. They were booked to 178 on this flight. And the waiting room really wasn't designed for that many people. So there were certainly a lot of people standing around. We were packed tightly in the room. So that bit was kind of uncomfortable. So I don't know how they're going to solve having so many people. If there was another flight going out at the same time, it really would have been miserable. There was a point before we started boarding where TSA actually stopped screening people because there was no more room in the waiting area. Once they started boarding, then they let the the rest of the flight go through screening to get in.
You know, that's something that many passengers would blame on the airline, but it's not an airline problem. That's an airport operations problem. And if passenger service into Eureka picks up, I guess Eureka Airport will need, or I can't remember what you the name of the airport, but that airport will need to look at its services and maybe expand to accommodate more passengers.
Yeah, you say that it's not the airline's responsibility, but yet I know Avelo is planning on expanding into New Haven, Connecticut. And if I remember correctly, they're investing something like $1.4 million in a terminal expansion for that. So they are making an investment upgrading the passenger facilities. So I don't know exactly how that works, but at least in Connecticut, they're getting money from the airline to expand.
I think that has something to do with the fact that in New Haven, Connecticut, that's going to be an Avelo hub. It's going to be the primary airport on the East
Coast.
So Avelo needs to set that up as their hub, just like they probably had to spend more money in L.A. to set things up for themselves.
No, there were no changes made to the Burbank Airport at all.
It must have been big enough to accommodate them then.
I think with the reduction in service from the other airlines – yeah, they just took over a United gate, and I don't know whose check-in counters they took over, but yeah, there's absolutely no additional work done at Burbank.
So other than the check-in and wait at the airport because it was so crowded, any other issues? Anything else happened on the way back?
No, and onboard flight service was great. They still handed out the bottle of water, Lornadunes, and a sanitizing wipe. In talking with the flight crew, they said that in a little bit, they're going to start to offer beverage service and possibly have meals for sale. So kind of looking forward to that the next time I fly them. If they indeed start offering food for purchase, that'll be interesting to check out as well. But besides these little operational delays, again, it's just so nice flying on them. They have very reasonable rates. The staff is so incredibly courteous. I just wish they could work on their on-time performance and delivery of luggage.
Well, you know, I think you're going to have something to look forward to. I can't imagine they won't improve. You got to remember, the airline's less than 6 months old now. So it's just a question of learning what the issues are and getting better. And it sounds like they may become one of your favorites.
Yeah, I want to love them. I really do. Their attitude, their spirit, the product that they're delivering is, I guess I can't say it's really good, but it's ripe with potential.
It's all about the attitude that makes it good. You know, even when you have a bad situation, if you've got people handling it well with the right attitude and approaching you correctly with a smile on their face saying, yes, we know it sucks, but we're all going to suck together.
Yeah, no, and I'm really looking forward to the next flight. And who knows, maybe I'll go to Grand Junction or head out to Montana or Utah or some other place. And, you know, hopefully I'll see some of the same flight attendants and get some familiar faces there. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to flying on them again.
Well, when you do, let's get back together and talk about it. Brian, it's always great talking with you, and I wish you many more happy miles on Avelo Airlines.
Thank you very much, Micah. Have a great day. And to everyone else, remember, fly safely.
And from here in Portland, Maine, this is your main man, Micah, signing off.
Wow, that was fun.
Yeah, great conversation. I love the idea of bringing a little gift or something for the flight attendants. That's the kind of thing where I hear that and I think, wow, you know, I'm going to do that next time. And then I completely forget about it.
And I've never heard of that before. He said a thank you card. So, I mean, it sounded like it was, you know, a card of some kind.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Something
he started
small,
but doing that a couple of years ago. I can't remember. I don't know if he handwrites them or what he does, but I mean, that kind of goes back to that earlier story we had about why the flight attendants were so irritated that the pilots were getting big pay raises and they weren't getting diddly. Anything.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't. Can I say diddly?
You can say diddly.
Oh, okay. Because it's a good thing I didn't say crap. But, you know, it again, because the cabin has turned into the battleground. It's the front line, and it's just not fair that the flight attendants take all the grief from the ridiculous passengers that get in the cabin, and the pilots pretty much get off scot-free.
So I have a couple of different thoughts about this. First of is, guys, we might as well just make this a wrap and, you know, end this show now, because I'm thinking the Micah and Brian travel show, or, you know, I don't know if they'll call it Micah Bourdain or something like that. I mean, cool. It's a great travel show. I certainly enjoyed it. I love Eureka. It's very much as Brian described it. It's and it wasn't just the pandemic that has, you know, kind of hurt it economically. If you go back probably 20, well, closer to 30 years, it was the decline of the lumber industry. I mean, that area really, you know, was booming, you know, earlier in the century, and, well, not this century, the prior century. And you see some beautiful old Victorian homes that were built off of, you know, lumber money. And it's a spectacular, fun, you know, little town. And it's, you know, anyway, I would encourage anybody to go visit there. And yes, the airport, which serves two towns and it's north of town, I've been to, and it's really small. But think about traditionally who's flown in there. Traditionally, it was 20-seat turboprops. So, of course, you know, the terminal was built for that, not built for 737. So no surprise there.
I thought it was pretty interesting on this concept of charging more for carry-on than checked luggage. You know, I've had this carry-on soapbox for a long time. I even had an opportunity to stand on it in several years. But I hate carry-on with a passion. I think the airframers should make the overhead bins at most half the size that they are now. And airlines should charge more for it. I always check my stuff, you know, other than the little tiny bag with maybe my camera and any medications, you know, sort of the essentials. I just don't like schlepping all my stuff through airports. I'd much rather there be an efficient, you know, system of checked luggage, which there isn't. But that's the part they should work on.
Actually, there is a very efficient system, and I think that's what Avella was using, and I think that was because of the, you know, that caused the 45-minute delay that Brian was talking about. I think what they found is it's just more cost-effective to take all those bags, FedEx them up to Eureka, yeah. And they're just waiting for the FedEx truck to get there with the luggage.
Yeah, that's great. I have not seen any evidence of anybody seriously tackling the problem of how long it takes to retrieve your checked luggage. I mean, anytime you've got a process that's hasn't been seriously looked at, you know you can cut it at least in half, you know, easily, and a lot more if you try hard. But no one just seems to address that. So we just make it easier and easier for people to, you know, bring all their stuff on the plane with them. I hate it. It's my biggest criticism of air travel, actually.
Well, and especially at airlines, take Southwest, that doesn't even charge for a carry-on bag. I'm sorry, for a check bag. And I've watched this for years on Southwest because I fly them a lot. People lugging bags that are big enough to carry their younger brother in. Yeah. And then they hoist them up over their head and stuff them in the overhead. And I go, why would somebody drag that big thing? Well, I'm afraid my bag might get lost. Okay.
Have fun with it.
But
40.
Yeah, but
bag.
Most of the airplane is like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or you do what I do is you take your carry-on luggage to the gate, and then when they say our overheads are probably filled, will anybody volunteer to check your luggage?
Yeah, do a gate check.
And we'll throw it in the airplane, and we'll have it waiting for you when you get off the airplane. Absolutely, that's the deal.
Sure.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
And speaking of deals, I did go onto the Avella website, and we're trying to figure out, you know, the policing mechanism for the carry-on bag charges. And it says they get one free personal item, and there's a size limit, 14 by 9 by 10, roughly. So not really large, you know, they describe that as purse, briefcase, laptop, computer case, small backpack, or small camera case. It's only when you then move up to the carry-on bag size where it's going to be charged $35. And he is right that it's $10 for the checked baggage. Mm-hmm. Oh, but you know, the other thing I was just thinking, you know, this kind of brings us full circle back to, you know, the bonuses being paid for pilots, unemployed actors. I'm thinking we have just solved the pilot shortage in this country. I mean, think of the thousands and thousands of unemployed actors. We'll just send them to Florida for 1 week and then get them in the front of those airplanes and start flying. It's just the same method they're using for the flight attendants. What could go wrong?
And there's a reason probably why they're unemployed actors.
But think about how good the in-cockpit cabin announcements would be.
That's right.
Hello, this is Captain Zorn. So, I mean, you're going to have the best voiceovers, you know, for those in-cabin announcements.
Yeah, yeah.
You're flying at 50,000 feet.
Yeah.
And so what is the reason that there are so many unemployed actors, David? I thought you were going to explain that.
Probably because they're bad at acting?
No.
Ooh, oh. No. And that's David Vanderhoof with that's a right. V. And all of you unemployed actors, just don't bother us nice guys because we didn't say anything like that that would really offend a lot of people.
I think it's supply and demand. There are just a lot of people that would love to be, you know, an actor or actress. And unfortunately, there's just, you know, there's not enough demand to employ all of those people who'd like to do that. And I don't think it means they're bad.
So, you know what, Mr. Trescott, I agree with you. I think we figured it out. When the airlines go to unmanned or remotely piloted jet planes, we'll hire actors to be in the cockpit to do the announcements.
And that's all they'll do.
And that's all they'll do.
And they'll think that there are people up front flying the airplane, but they're really just people back in the cabin making announcements.
And think of the cost savings for the airlines only having to pay a bunch of out-of-work actors. Don't wonder what the SAG Guild will say, but...
Oh, God, don't give them any ideas. Oh, my Lord.
All right, what's up with the geeks? Hey, I'm seeing lots of updates at our eatattheairport.com site. And, of course, most of you know what that is. By now, that's the...
But what about the people who don't know what it is?
Well, so let me tell you what it is.
What is it?
The basic idea is that it's a way to locate airports that have airport diners, some kind of eating establishment on site at the airport. Why would you want to know that? Well, if you're a pilot, then, you know, that's kind of obvious. But if you're not, or if you're just traveling by, you know, you can go have lunch at the airport or breakfast or something and support the business at the airport. A lot of them have great views of the runways and things. And so it's a place where you can find those. So there have been a lot of updates lately, but there have been some additions to the database of eating establishments. But there's also been a ton of revisions because we have a form at eatattheairport.com where you can also suggest a revision to something that's already listed. And pretty much all of the revisions, I think maybe all of them, are closures. The airport diner has closed or gone out of business or that sort of thing. So keeping it current with closures is just as important, if not maybe more important, than adding new establishments to the database. So just encourage folks, if they're out at the airport, happen to notice that, well, there either is some place to eat there or especially some place to eat there is gone now, closed down, help everybody else learn that fact over at eatattheairport.com. Who else has something? Rob, anything going on in your world these days?
Can you say vacation?
Yes, Mr. Rogers.
You're going on vacation?
I am taking a little well-earned time off. I feel like it's time to go see the young'un and see what she's up to in her... if they have man caves, what's the lady equivalent of a man cave? Does anybody ever figure that out?
It's a she shed.
A she shed. Right. Oh, that's right.
A she shed. Yeah.
We're headed out to LA tomorrow morning to visit her. And she surprised us with a little something cool. I mean, actually not literally cool. It's actually pretty hot. But during our time in L.A., my daughter found us an Airbnb in Joshua Tree, California, which is a national park. And as my friend Mr. Trescott told me today, it's a little toasty out there this time of the year. I mean, it's August. Who'd have thunk? The desert is hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'm just funny here, but I'm really grateful that we're all going to get to hang out and we'll see the stars, I guess, because apparently the air is so clean out there. It's not troubled by any of those nasty fires up north, like where Max lives. So again, it's going to be fun to just hang out and not have anything special to do. And, actually, I'm just very glad that there aren't any fires out that way. But who knows? The season is not over yet.
Yeah, that's true.
I was just checking the temperatures here. It's going to be mid to upper 90s during the rest of the week. So, and speaking of fires, by the way, I was out today, had to run some errands, and I was wearing my mask. And no, it wasn't the COVID I was concerned about. It was all the fine particles from the fires. So we've got extra reasons for wearing masks around here.
All right. Unless someone's got something else, we have an interview that Hillel did at Oshkosh this year. This is with the CEO of Crew Dog Electronics. And we can listen in as Hillel talks with Sean.
This is Hillel Glazer again, the aviation entrepreneurship and innovation correspondent for the Airplane Geeks, and we are still in Oshkosh, Wisconsin for AirVenture 2021. I am back again with our friend Sean Chupless from Crew Dog Electronics out of Colorado, and even though I've interviewed you twice over the last several AirVentures, let's remind people who you are, what you do, why you're here, a little bit of your background, and then we'll jump into what's going on with Crew Dog.
Sure. So my name is Sean. My background is kind of spans all the flavors of aviation. I learned to fly in the Air Force. I was an instructor in KC-10s, flew a little bit in Hawaii with G-4s, and then I was a CFI and moved on to the airline. So my day job is I fly for a major airline. And I've also got a company, Crew Dog Electronics, which specializes in ADS-B in equipment. And we do some other aviation accessories. And I also still do a reserve job in the Space Force. So I jam satellites on the side.
No, that's great. So first of all, thank you for your service.
Appreciate it.
And all right, so Crew Dog Electronics in the ADS-B in. And things have been kind of weird in aviation over the last couple of years, to say the least. How's that affected what's going on with Crew Dog?
We've had some difficulties with sort of the chip shortage with China, and definitely COVID was a tough year for us, getting supplies in from China. And a lot of our sales go up through Amazon, and Amazon was strictly medical supplies for a good part of 2020. So things were slowed down a little bit, but everything is back up. We're doing pretty good business, steady. We've got a couple new products. And we're excited to be back here for Oshkosh for our third year.
So speaking of Oshkosh for your third year, the first year you were out in the Fly Mart where it was always hot and dusty. And then you quickly graduated to one of the big hangars and you're here again. So it sounds like Oshkosh is good business for you.
Yeah, it's been a progression upwards, thankfully. And we're fortunate enough to have a corner booth here this year. Having inside hangar space and having a good footprint, we've had a chance to connect with a lot more customers and get a lot more people coming by. So it's been good to us, and I think we'll be here every year coming forward.
Be great to see you here. So interesting that you also mentioned how the pandemic affected you, because generally speaking, surprisingly enough, for many sectors of the aviation world, when you stop looking at airline traffic, which rebounded but for a while was hurting, a lot of aspects of aviation were doing quite well, actually, in aviation. General aviation was going up, home builds were going up, people were going back to get certificated or to get, you know, if they were rusty, they were going back. So general aviation and many other, like private aviation, have actually fared quite well. And You were affected because of a supply chain issue. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Like, otherwise, you know, initially your market was shut out of the Amazon marketplace because they were just going to focus on medical supplies. But then when that resolved and the market started picking up with everything else, people who wanted to buy your product couldn't because you were not able to get your own supplies. Did you just ride it out? Did you invest in other products? What did you do during that time?
We just kind of had to ride it out. So I had to wait. It's funny. Like, I had shipments coming over from China that were sitting in the port in California for, I think, 3 months because everyone else had the same problem. When transportation and supplies were done from China, there was just this massive backlog of things waiting to get shipped out. So we spent a lot of that time kind of reinvesting and refocusing and actually making some new product lines. So because a lot of people weren't flying this past year or not able to, you know, working on their own aircraft, and a lot of customers are asking me about ways to monitor traffic just from their living room. So we've actually, we're doing a PieWare unit now too, which is kind of a...
Can you tell us what PieWare is for people that don't know?
So if you've heard of FlightAware, the network where you can kind of just put in a flight number, see their track, where they're going, airspeed, altitude, all that stuff. So that's a global network, but that's all fed by receivers that are people have from around the world. So PieWare is a project that uses Raspberry Pi and software where you can have your own receiver and it'll receive aircraft that are about 150, 200 miles around you, and it'll feed that out to the internet and connect it so anyone using the FlightAware app can see the aircraft that you can see, and all that connected gives you global coverage.
So you're tapping into that market of do it yourself, stay at home, the kind of things that people would do with their time if they're av geeks, but they can't fly or they won't fly for whatever reason. So there's a whole kind of market there for things that people were doing at home. Like, people were cooking more, they were taking online classes, and maybe there's a lot more gaming that was going on, certainly a lot more gaming, a lot more Netflix watching and binge watching. So you just tapped into that new market.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're trying to do the same thing that I initially did with Stratix, taking a project that was a little geeky, a little techy, but maybe a little too much for a lot of people to get into, and I tried to make it easy. So a lot of the hardware that PieWare uses is the same things that we're using in Stratix. We have a 1090 receiver, and now FlightAware supports UAT 978 traffic. So we added the same UAT chip that we use for Stratix on this PieWare unit, and we make it easy. It's all in a kit. All you do is plug it into the wall, configure it to your Wi-Fi network, and now you're transmitting to the FlightAware network.
So you're actually contributing to the FlightAware network of ground receivers is what effectively this boils down to.
Yes, absolutely. So what your receiver is now connected to the internet, and the information you're seeing gets put out to the FlightAware servers. Anyone in the world can look up the flights that you're seeing overhead and get that information.
Which I think is actually being used not only for real traffic, but the sim world, the simulation piloting world, uses live data. And so there's, you know, those people that are getting into sim got into sim over the pandemic are also people that would be looking at their, you know, having a PieWare receiver nearby or in their house.
Yep, absolutely. And like you said, a lot of people at home doing different projects. So this whole time we've kind of been doing research and development into that, and we're also looking at there's technology where you can do transmission for kind of like plane to plane or network to network to have a sort of a homegrown ADS-B network. So we're looking at doing something like that maybe in the next 6 months to a year for people that don't have access to an ADS-B tower. So I'll be excited to talk about that when that comes to more of a fruition.
So hopefully this time next year we'll be talking about how well that's doing.
Yes, absolutely. I hope so.
Well, you certainly don't seem to be wanting for things to do with yourself, Sean. I mean, besides your Air Force reserves and your actual job, you know, it's a side hustle. We should start calling you side hustle, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to have more than one iron in the fire because you never know, a global pandemic might happen and you have a furlough letter from your major airline job. So I've always had varied interests, and I think it's good to kind of diversify and spread it out, and it keeps me involved in different aspects of aviation and aerospace, and it keeps life interesting for me.
You find yourself doing flight reviews during the pandemic to keep ends meet, make ends meet?
No, I haven't gone that far yet, but maybe next pandemic I'll be doing that.
That's great, Sean. Is there anything you want to tell us about or anything you want people to know other than how to get a hold of you or Crew Dog or the products? Is there anything we should be talking about that I didn't think of?
Just want to say if you have any suggestions or anything else you want to be worked on, we take a lot of customer feedback and we're constantly improving the product. So the whole reason I got involved with Crew Dog Electronics and building Stratix receivers is I want this to be accessible to everybody, and I want stuff that is not going to expire when the battery dies and you have to buy a new product. Every single piece of equipment that is on our ADS-BN receivers is sold on Amazon, so you can fix the antenna, you can replace the battery, everything, and I want this to last for years. So if you have suggestions for improvement or something else you want to see made, you can either contribute to the open source software project or give us suggestions for hardware improvements, and we'll try and develop something for you.
That's great. You know, community is a theme that we cover often in the Airplane Geeks podcast, and there are places to find or create communities throughout aviation, and so this is just another example of using a community and being part of a community to improve the whole community. So I think that's really cool. So if you're out there and you want to be part of a maker community, and you want to blend the maker community with the aviation community, getting involved in some of these open source aviation products sounds like a really great way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the innovation that we've had has been from community contribution. One of the lead developers right now is out of Germany, and he's actually taken Stratix and ported that over to FLARM. So that's kind of the protocol that they use over in Europe. And so there's glider pilots, general aviation pilots over in Europe that are now using a Stratix receiver that can receive FLARM information. So the community's been huge. It's what keeps this project going, and it's what's allowed us to have so many different use cases.
That's great, Sean. So could you tell us how people can find you? I guess your website or other places that you're on the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find Crew Dog Electronics on www.crewdogelectronics.com. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. And if you want to get involved with the Stratix project, stratix.com. And all the development happens on the Slack channel. And we're also very active on Reddit, /r/Stratix.
So if you cannot figure all that out yourself, just come to Oshkosh next year and find Sean in one of the hangars.
Absolutely. We're in Hangar C this year, and we'll probably be in Hangar C again next year. And if you're at the event this year, we'll be giving a live demo tomorrow 1 p.m. at the forums. And it'll be a Stratix user group meetup at 2:30. So all of us that have been talking with each other on the internet can actually meet face-to-face and see that we're real human beings.
Well, by the time anybody hears this, I don't think that will be an option. But keep in mind for next time here at AirVenture to look for Sean in the forums and get involved with the community by being here in person. Again, thanks so much for being with us, Sean, and hope you continue to have a great... The show's going good for you so far?
Absolutely. We've had a lot of traffic, and, you know, I think it was a rough year for everyone last year, and it's just so good to be out here. And me personally, I only do sales online. So this is the one time every year I get to meet customers. They tell me about how they're using the product, and it kind of reinvigorates me and gives me a lot of energy, and I'm elated to be here.
Well, that's the perfect way to end. Thanks so much, Sean, and continue to have a great show.
All right. Thanks for having me.
It'll be interesting to see how that evolves since today, what is it, Monday today, there was an announcement that Raytheon bought FlightAware. So, of course, FlightAware is the largest network of independent ADS-B receivers anywhere in the world. And so will that mean more business for people that buy Sean's stuff or less or all the same? I don't know. We'll see what happens because Raytheon's certainly a 800-pound gorilla, and that is going to yet to be seen, but we'll see what happens over the next few months.
And a friend of the show, Isaac Alexander, who's on Twitter as Jet City Star, sent me that announcement earlier in the day as well. And it's the Collins division of Raytheon, which is purchasing FlightAware. FlightAware, I was surprised, now has 130 employees, but they've been around for at least 10 years that I recall. So they've built up a lot of business. I think most of us think of them as the free place where we can go out to track individual flights. But of course, they have a lot of paid services for companies, both airlines and FBOs, which are servicing aircraft landing at various small general aviation airports. So they've got a lot of business that's just not readily apparent to those of us who use it as individual consumers.
Yeah, I just pulled this up really quickly. I don't offhand see anything about what Collins Aerospace has paid for FlightAware. That would be interesting.
Oh, I bet it was a significant amount.
I bet it was, yeah. I bet some people are easily going to retire now, I'm sure. Fascinating. So thanks, Hillel, for doing that. I think that's the last interview that Hillel recorded at Sun and Fun. We do have some...
How about Oshkosh?
Oshkosh, sorry.
Well, you know why? Because Oshkosh has been over for almost a month.
I know.
But he doesn't know that. No, I'm kidding. I'm
a lot of material here. We have some more from Brian and Micah, too, coming up. So can look forward to that. One email from a listener that we wanted to mention from Gabe. Gabe sent us a link to an article, Teen Pilot Aims to Be Youngest Woman Ever to Fly Solo Around the World. And this is Zara Rutherford, who's 19, who left Belgium on August 18th. And she's looking to cover 32,000 miles over 52 countries, 5 continents. And she hopes to finish up her journey back in Belgium on or around November 3rd. So this is pretty cool. It's, I guess, a way to raise awareness about the lack of women in aviation and also STEM and that sort of thing.
And she's doing it in a Shark.
That's right, in a Shark Ultralight. Yeah, one of our favorite airplanes. So that is very cool. There is a website, her website, where you can learn more and follow along is flyzolo.com, which is FLYZOLO.com. So you can take a look at that and follow along. All right. Well, with that, we want to thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. You can find us at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes for this episode at airplanegeeks.com/668. And our email is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. All right, David, Mr. Vanderhoof, where do we find you?
You can find me on our Slack listener team, and you do that by sending us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And, of course, you can find me anywhere on Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. If you can spell Vanderhoof, which, of course, by now you can. And, of course, at the American Helicopter Museum, where we've got all sorts of things coming up. And if you're in the area, let me know. I'd love to see either fly in or drive in.
All right. And Max Trescott, how about you?
Oh, just a quick mention that episode 200 of the Aviation News Talk podcast came out a few days ago.
Yay!
And it's called What You Need to Know About Best Glide Speed. And I also talked about a number of recent accidents. And so check that out. I've already gotten some feedback from people who said, oh, this is great. This is just what I need to know as a private pilot. Best place to always find me on your AM dial is at the Aviation News Talk podcast and whatever podcast player you're listening to this show on. And you can always email me by going out to aviationnewstalk.com and click on contact at the top of the page.
And congratulations on 200. That's a big milestone.
Thank you. Well, and of course, this is just one of many shows that have spun out of the Airplane Geeks podcast. I'm sure if we were to sit back and count, we could probably think of at least a half a dozen shows that have spun out from this podcast.
I wonder how many episodes they would collectively add up to. That might be an interesting number.
A lot.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Rob, Mark, do we have a place to find you?
Not one that I'm willing to disclose. I'm intending to be very private about my vacation. I'll just say that it's somewhere around Los Angeles until we're not in Los Angeles.
And then it'll be somewhere else.
Then we're going to see a tree in the desert. And it's going to be very mystical. I hear if you eat the, what are those things you're supposed to eat that make you crazy? Is it the coyote plants?
Peyote?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, well, all right. I'm sorry. I thought it was coyote plants, but so we'll be looking for some of those and trying to bring them back for research study. But actually, I really don't care about what we do. We're just going to have a good time with the family. And, you know, it's just what we thought. This was really starting to get back to normal. You know, even around Oshkosh, boy, in the last month, it's really changed from, I don't know, I think we're going to be traveling as much as we used to. But we've got to keep our wits about her and, our wits about us and hang in there. Cause as depressing as it is sometimes, there's no other option. We have to just keep going and hope for the best. And at least we got the jab, as the Brits say, or yeah, the couple of jabs. David, I didn't want to end the show without making mention of something that the other people listening can't see, which is that cool shirt you're wearing. I think hardly anybody probably noticed it, but David, it worked for me.
I did it just for you, Rob.
I had a feeling you did.
So you guys have to explain what this is.
We can't tell.
I'm wearing an official JetWine and ComAvia shirt that says JetWine on one sleeve, Airplane Geeks on the other, and ComAvia on the chest.
Wow. Did it say all that? I didn't remember that. I don't think I even have one of those anymore. Yeah, look at that. I'll be darned. Wow.
Boy, that's a collector's item.
Does that help you meet girls?
No. No. But then again, I'm happily with a girl, so I don't need to meet anymore.
Right. And of course, I couldn't possibly say that because, I think I'm just going to shut up now.
Very good. That's a wise decision.
Hey, and by the way, did you folks notice that Rob's been very secretive about his travel plans and location? I finally realized ever since he left Flying Magazine, he's apparently now in the Witness Protection Program. I'm not sure what the relationship between those two events is, but...
And you know what? When they... Oh, go ahead, Mac.
I was going to say that you're broadcasting from a secret location. However, if you have the ability to track cicadas, you'll be able to find his lair. Yeah.
Although they've gone to sleep by now, we don't hear much activity.
Yeah, you know they have. I don't know. Do they basically snooze once the sun goes down? I don't know. Yeah.
Either that, or maybe they're bored listening to us.
That could be. That's probably what it really is. But anyway, listen, it's been fun, and of course, guys, I won't see you next week because I'll still be vacationing on Monday of next week. I'm just going to leave this show in your hands, Max and David, and who else knows who may show up on the Airplane Geeks channel.
That's right. We'll have to see. All right. Well, you can find me at 30,000feet.com. I think I got an email from my host provider like on Friday that said I need to download all of my website files by Sunday. I sent him an email. I said, why? Because that doesn't sound very encouraging. So maybe I'm there, maybe I'm not, but you can try and find me there. All right. Well, with all of that, we'll ask that you please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
Night, everybody. And thanks for listening.
May I interrupt with some breaking news?
Okay.
30, I don't dial it in very often, so I may not have spelled it correctly, but 30,000 feet, FEET.com is up for sale.
No, it's not. Did you spell out 30?
Yeah, 3000.
No, spell it out as a word.
Yeah, T-H-I-R-T-Y.
Okay, I wondered about that.
I've had that since 1996.
Okay, I just want to let you know that somebody thinks it's worth $49.95. So, anyway, but okay, that's good to know. Sorry about that. All right. That's not breaking news, actually. Do you know what the frequency is of the cicadas?
Yeah, I said that they were 5,000 hertz, but you know what?
Oh, I was going to guess it's closer to, it's lower than that.
No, but not much. It's like,
really?
Yeah, it's like 4,750 or something like that.
Oh, good ear. Wow.
And so did that filter them out?
Yeah, I knocked it down.
Okay, this sounds like the beginning of a bad joke.
I know.
What's the frequency of it? Evanston cicada. Yeah.
Is that really what that noise is, Rob?
Yeah.
No.
Trust
me. Well, you have to realize there are nothing but trees around here. There are nothing but trees around here.
Sounds like you're in the forest, man.
You are in a very dense forested area.
Oh, absolutely.
For being only like 10 miles away from downtown Chicago.
That noise is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard that loud before.
It is pretty loud tonight.
We were just someplace. Oh, we were about three suburbs up last week and in my buddy's backyard. And he said, wow, do you hear that noise? And I said, what noise?
What noise?
He said, the cicadas are really loud. And I said, you could hear a little. He said, you think that's loud? You ought to come to my backyard. I want to be known as Dr. Cicada.
Right.
That
better than Kevorkian, that's all I can say.
It sounds evil. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but that Dr. means you can only come out every 7 years, Rob.
Yeah, you said every year. That's amazing.
Well, I don't know. It's certainly not 17 years. Well, we've not been doing it that long. I mean, I hear these every summer.
Yeah, there's some that come out every year. There are some that are on shorter cycles. Yeah. You know, not the 17-year cycle. So
not the super brood.
There's always some around. Right, not the super brood. There's always some around. I have them every year, too. But, see, I close my windows and put up padding.
That's the difference. You don't close your windows, Rob.
Well, it's a little warm up here right now because me, like a dummy, I turned off the air conditioning earlier because I said, gotten nice out and
it'll be great. Don't, because Max is about to whine.
Anyway, it's 84 degrees and 70% humidity in here.
Inside.
Inside.
You don't have any air conditioning where you're at?
No. And I turned
I didn't
the fan.
Know that.
Actually, I still have a fan on. I've turned the fan off. So now I have no fans, no windows.
Flight suffers for his art.
This is what I do every year.
Have you ever heard of window air conditioners?
Yeah, but that would make noise.
Well, couldn't you train your system and figure out what the frequency is of the air conditioner fan and just...
Are we talking frequency again?
Yeah.
Disappear it?
No, this house is too old and too leaky. I mean, I've had window air conditioners before, but the electric bill goes through the roof.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So
what's your point?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even want to see what ours is going to be this year, so... But my comfort is more important. So
it's nice that the audience will suffer for your comfort.
There, I just fixed the problem.
Oh, yeah. I think the problem went away.
See how quiet
it is now?
Sounds
pretty good now. Yeah.
You definitely, you worked magnet. You hit the right frequency and everything.
Yeah, I know. I put in the cicada filter.
Yep, it works.
It does.
I can't even hear them at all now.
No.
Good job.
It's
all right,
silent.
Let's get ready to start the show.
Okay. All right, I'll turn Rob back on.
Rob's worst nightmare, not being able to talk.
I'm simply overwhelmed by your.
We're overwhelmed by your cicadas.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, they are pretty loud, the little buddy.
Yeah,
thank you.
So. David's already gone.
And I'm gone, too.
Good night, all.
Well, bye. Fine. All right, go. Just go.
All right, here
don't
it goes.
Don't worry about me.